And welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
We are at episode number 76 of Revitalize and Replant. Thank you for being here. I'm joined by Mark Clifton, Jonathan Howe, Amy Thompson, Amy Jordan, and my good friend Akeem Abdul-Morella is with us as he often joins us for these podcasts. And we're going to be talking about how to respond when the members don't want to engage the community. Once again, listening audience, I wish you could have listened in to the conversation before the button was pushed to go live. We were talking about cornea transplants. We were talking about pastors crawling on the floor, shooting rubber band guns. It was just a kind of a different conversation that was going on. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about members don't want to be engaging in the community. And Jonathan, the question comes from Mike.
Yeah, Mike says that I have been trying for 10 years to revitalize a church. I have recently come to realize the members don't want to minister to the community. They do not feel that mingling with the community is glorifying to God and would somehow taint their sanctification. How would you respond to my situation?
Mark, have you ever heard a pastor say these members don't want to do anything?
I have.
Or is this a unique situation?
I have. And my first question, and I mean this in all sincerity, Mike, how are you doing it? Are they seeing you doing it? And are they seeing you have joy in doing it?
That's your third question, actually.
Okay. Yeah, that's point three. That's
it is? Yeah. I never read the notes. It's just like high school. I just show up and I just deal with it as it comes.
By the way, where did you go to college?
I went to William Jewell College in Liberty, Missouri. A very, very highfalutin kind of, you got to be smart to go there. So I'm not sure how I managed.
Wow. But
I went to William Jewell, little liberal arts college in Liberty, Missouri. Yeah.
Heard of it.
I did. Yeah, it's a great school. So,
what year did you graduate?
What year did I graduate? 82. Yeah.
Okay. Again, I finished college in 77. Okay. I am much older than you.
I graduated in high school in 78. So there you go.
Okay.
Y'all writing this down so you'll know.
Okay. Yeah. Our listening audience are just dying.
They just went to another podcast, is what they did right now.
Okay, Mike. Thank you for asking the question. What does Mike get for
Mike
asking
gets
the question?
A copy of Scrappy Church by Tom Rainer and Reclaiming Glory by Mark Clifton.
Well, one of the reasons the church is dying is because the people don't care about the community. So, I mean, it's sort of obvious, you know, when he says, you know, our people, we're trying to revitalize this church and they don't want to minister to the community. Well, if they wanted to minister to the community, you wouldn't be trying to revitalize the church. It would be revitalized. So that's
Bingo.
Part of the issue, yeah.
Now, the statement that he says, they do not feel that mingling with the community is glorifying to God and would somehow taint their sanctification. There's
that's,
nobody.
That's kind of new.
Well.
But there's no community that is glorifying to God.
I mean, you know what? You know what that is? You know what jumps out at me at that page is some of my upbringing. There's legalism in that. We don't hang out with worldly people. We don't do worldly things.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's where that comes
Amy
from.
Amy T. gets that.
Yeah, I get it. We don't hang out with worldly people. We don't do worldly
Amy
things.
Amy J. gets that, too.
I mean, there was one drugstore in the town I grew up in, the county seat town, that sold beer, and I never was allowed to go in that drugstore. Under any circumstances whatsoever.
Don't drink, smoke, or chew, or go with girls that do.
And I'd always wanted to go in that drugstore. Every time we'd go by, I'd say, I want to go to that. We can't go in there because they sell beer. In other words, it would taint us if we just... And so I think probably what he's experiencing is some legalism here, and he needs to deal with it theologically before he just deals with it pragmatically. And can't just lay more guilt on them, but help them understand why they feel that way.
Well, we move into the questions here. These are seven questions to ask and in response to this. Number one, have your members faced any type of harsh reality? Basically, have they experienced sufficient pain to change?
Yeah, a lot of the churches that come to you, Mark, for replanting, revitalization, turnaround, they're ready. They want something different, but many of them have to get to a point where it hurts so much they don't have any choice.
Yeah, that's true. We always say, Charles Chaney used to say the only real catalyst for change.
Charles Chaney. I do even know.
Do you?
Home Mission Board.
Not Lon Chaney.
No, Home Mission Board, Charles Chaney.
Home Mission Board and Hannibal, Southwest Baptist University.
Southwest Baptist University,
and
exactly.
The Illinois State Convention.
Yeah. Did he precede Larry Lewis there?
No, where? No, Larry Lewis was at Hannibal.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so... Again, we've just lost the podcast.
But okay.
No.
And y'all lost me.
But Charles Chaney used to always say the really only catalyst for change is discontent. And if the discontent rises enough, then they'll be willing to change. I actually, Love Charles Chaney. He's a huge influence on my life. And I would agree that that is a catalyst for change. I don't think it's the best one.
Okay.
I always tell guys in revitalization, the best catalyst for change is not their pain, but helping them exchange whatever joy and comfort and security they now have for a superior joy and comfort and security in doing what Jesus wants them to do and following him only. So what they're doing by saying, we don't want to go do this and we're comfortable where we are, they're finding their joy in something in the sameness, the familiarity of things, the seeing the same people doing the same thing in a world that's changing very rapidly. They show up at that church, and we've said this before, it looks the same, it smells the same, it feels the same. And so they find some degree of satisfaction in that sameness, but that's not the same thing as finding your joy in Jesus and what he wants to do for the church. And we always say, you know something's a false idol if you're afraid of losing it. And so if they're afraid that you're going to take something away from them in their church, or you're going to make them do something they don't want to do, they are actually worshiping a false idol. So your job, Mike, as the pastor, is through your preaching and your conversations over a long period of time to help them lay down that idol that they have of sameness and comfort and security and the way things are, and instead embrace Jesus and what he wants and find their joy in serving him.
All right. Number two.
What is your process of equipping people one by one? It
goes back to what Mark was saying about helping the people to look at what is really joy. My first revitalization was the Church of First Merle, where I was voted in by a vote of 6-1. Everybody knows that story that is in this room anyway. The second person that became a believer in Christ was Steve, and I took it upon myself, not by any type of wisdom or strategy, maybe the Holy Spirit helped me, to begin to equip Steve one-on-one on what the church is supposed to look like. He was a catalyst for change for the rest of the members, the other seven members. So you're talking about getting the members in their right mind, right frame set, my right mindset. I'm getting all my words mixed up. Right mindset. So that they can look at what is really important.
Absolutely. They see it modeled. And I like what the question here is, what's your process of equipping people one by one?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the joys of being in a normal sized church is you really can do that. You don't have to do it in a large group. You can find one person in that church that seems to be a little more open to the gospel, a little more desirous to go deeper with Jesus, and spend some time one-on-one with that person. And it gets us into the next one, just how do you set the example? Well, as you're setting the example of serving the community, you bring this person along with you.
Okay, so both of those are connected together.
Move into that third one then. How do you set the example?
Well, again, guys all the time tell me, you know, my church just won't serve and they won't do anything and they don't care about the community and they don't even like the community. And I get all that. But do you care about the community? Do you love the community? And how does that love that you have, how does that reveal itself in your life? Are you out there serving even if they're not serving with you? If you're waiting for them to join you, they'll probably never do it. So you have to go do it on your own, and you have to model that for them, and you have to be joyful in it. And you have to be joyful in it even if they don't come along with you. And it can take a long time. But I promise you, Mike, if you will serve the neighborhood with joy, if you'll express to them how much you enjoy it, if they'll see some of the fruit of your labor, and then if you'll find just one of them to kind of take along with you, you can begin to change the trajectory of that and change the attitude of it. But you can't do it if you wait for them and say, well, they're not going to do it, so I can't be the one that. Yes, you are. You have to be the one, in my opinion, that has to lead out in this.
Yep. It's not just your opinion. I think the Apostle Paul in most of the letters would always set the example.
Yes.
And he would say, as I do. He would not say, you must do. He would say, follow my example. Some people will read some of the Pauline letters and they will say, well, that's arrogant. No, he's saying, I am willing to take the lead on this. It's not a matter of me just preaching to you or telling to you. I'm going to set the example. Now follow me.
Right. And churches that don't have any baptisms for a number of years, I realize how tragic that is. But to some degree, what am I doing as the pastor of that church to engage lost people and to try to lead someone that year to Christ and take a lead in that rather than just sit back and say, well, our church just isn't baptizing anybody?
Well, my old story that the people in this room have heard, I don't know if you've heard it, was at the Church of First Merle, where I just was hammering them. They hadn't had a baptism in 26 years. Mm-hmm. I was telling them how worthless they are. and how if they really love Jesus, they'd be telling people about Jesus. And the Holy Spirit just got a hold of me
yeah.
and convicted me that, hey, if we're having no baptisms, that means, Rainer, you're not doing anything either. And I wasn't. I really wasn't.
Right.
So that motivated me to go out in the community that led to the first conversion that was became a baptism in that church in 26 years, which turned that church around.
There you go. Did.
Still got the scar to prove it.
Good
yes,
word.
She bit me in the baptistry. That's the story behind it. There's
right?
a lot longer story behind it, but she was hydrophobic.
Oh, I see.
I tried to get her to become a Presbyterian.
Did you know she was hydrophobic?
Oh, yes, I did. I did. I mean, after I'd shared the gospel with her, she became a believer, and she said, "What's next?" I said, "Baptism." She started shaking like a leaf in a mighty wind. I found out she was hydrophobic, and I became baptismal phobic.
There you go.
And I should have been, because it was a bad, bad situation. She even cussed me out in the baptistry.
Is that right?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Very clear story.
He remembers it quite well.
In fact, she threatened to beat me up if I put her into the water while she was waist high in the baptistry.
Did you ever have your waders fill up in the
yes,
baptistry? Mine have done that.
Yes,
I don't wear waders anymore. I just go in my clothes. I like that. I just like to look like, man, this guy's in there in his clothes. But I had some deacons who bought some waders and wanted me to put them on, and so the first time I put them on, I guess I just went down too deep or whatever, but those things filled up, and I
was hard to get out.
I never got out of the baptistry. It was.
I had a staff member who put some pinholes in the crotch of the waiter. So, yeah,
that right.
Yeah,
I can't top that, Dr. Rainer.
Yeah.
That wins the day.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Drive safely.
That's why you always have a backup pair of pants.
Oh, I didn't.
Always have backup pants.
I didn't.
Split your pants, preaching once too. All right, we'll beat on these stories all day long. Yeah.
So we're talking about Mike and his church, who doesn't want to engage their community because they think it'll cause him to be worldly, and he's frustrated by that.
And have you celebrated sufficiently? So the small gains, we talked about this in a previous episode on here, but celebrating those small gains to see that, you know, build momentum and reaching the community.
Yeah, I would think so. And it's not listed on here, but man, it just keeps jumping out at me. When you look at the Good Samaritan story, you know, the priest and the Levite, I mean, they didn't want to touch him because if the guy had been dead, they'd have to go back to Jerusalem and get cleaned again. I mean, again, that's sort of that thing. I'm all sanctified and cleaned up. I don't want to get dirty. I mean, it fits pretty well here.
Yeah.
But what was the difference between the priest and the Levite and the Samaritan? What's the main difference? Well, the Samaritan had something the priest and the Levite didn't. The Samaritan had compassion. And until your folks actually get genuine compassion for their neighborhood, they're not going to change their attitude toward the neighborhood. So the place to begin is really to help them have compassion for those people. And that only happens really in prayer and focusing on that and really asking the Lord to just kind of break them on that. I've seen it happen in other congregations. It takes a long time sometimes, and you want it to happen quicker than it does. But until and unless your people get compassion for the people who live around them, it's always going to be an uphill battle to try to get them to serve them. It always is. And they'll have that whole attitude of the priest and the Levite, and they'll just pass by on the other side and say, well, whatever that guy did, he probably deserves to do it, to be experiencing that. So, yeah, it all starts with compassion. I wanted to bring that up, and I just
That's
did.
Good. That's all good. Right.
Number five, do you have a system of healthy groups in the church? This ministry should flow out of these groups.
Mark Clifton was talking about, I believe it was in episode 74. They run together for some reason. But I believe it was in episode 74 about churches that just have the same Sunday school class over and over again.
Yes.
That would be called an unhealthy group.
Yes.
Where you're not having fresh people come in, where you're not having new blood come into the group. So the question is, do you have a system of healthy groups in the church, not just groups, whether Sunday school classes, community groups, life groups, whatever the case may be. Here's an example. Yesterday, I met with Paul. Paul asked to meet with me, and so we met in Franklin, Tennessee. And Paul's in my community group. We co-teach it. There are three of us teaching it in that community group. First thing he says to me, now straight out of his mouth, I knew he had a lot of questions that he wanted to ask related to his family and personal, but one of the first things he asks is this. He says, what can we do to improve the passion of prayer in our church?
Mm.
Now, I'm thinking,
I
needed to just go grab my pastor,
right,
my son Jess, and say, this is the kind of member you have.
Right.
But what is taking place is relationally, Paul and I are connected because we're in the community group together. We have community every single week. And so that healthy system of groups makes us want to engage the community in ministry, in prayer, in life. And Paul is challenging me. I challenge him and David and others in that group. And we're always asking each other, what can we do better to have that type of outward focus? That's a healthy group, Mark.
It is. And unfortunately, in many dying churches, the Sunday school classes are the only groups they have. And those classes, as you said, are not healthy because nothing is happening. No new people are coming into those. It's the same ones that have been there all those years in the same room doing the same thing, and it impacts nobody outside of that, and they don't even serve anybody outside of that. And so those would not particularly be healthy groups, but you're right, having small groups. And if you do have small groups in your church, obviously that needs to be a place where the ministry of that small group is made known, and it really flows out of those small groups. So they're not just turned inward. You don't want your small groups only turned inward. They need to be outward as well.
That's good. That's
good. Number six, have you reviewed the ministries you're currently doing in your church? It may be that you're not reaching the community because you don't have any community ministry.
I got a consultation story.
Okay.
One of the things I sometimes do in a consultation is to look at the quantitative time spent in ministry, get estimates. And I looked at one particular church, and I don't remember the hours, but here's what I remember on the percentage of all of the ministries that they did, of all the programs they conducted, of all the activities they had, less than 0.5% was engaged beyond the church. It was all about inwardly.
Less than
0.5% of the time. It was like they had a couple of events during the year to try to, we're going to show we love the community, so right, we're going to do something for 2 hours a year.
Right.
I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. That's reviewing the ministries to see, are our ministries intentionally engaging the community?
Yeah, and I say it all the time, but I'm going to say it again. You don't do those ministries to get people in the community into your church building, because that's what's happened in the past. They've had a block party, they've done something, and then they'll tell me, well, we've done that, but nobody comes. Nobody comes to our church. It doesn't impact us at all. You don't do that to get people in your building. You do that to get the people in your building into the lives of the neighborhood and the lives of the community.
Yeah.
And so you find ways to serve them. And I would strongly suggest, Pastor Mike, that you get involved in all the nonprofits in your community. Find out who the nonprofits are that are serving your neighborhood, whether it's boys clubs or Meals on Wheels, or just be creative. Look at all the nonprofits that are out there, ad hoc committees against crime, whatever it is, and start going to their meetings, start learning, because they'll inform you about the needs of the community. And they may very well have some opportunities for your church to get involved without creating something. And you can do it, and you can bring somebody along with you. And then when you do that, it's really important to celebrate it. Talk about how great it was and how we were able to serve the neighborhood and serve the people and serve the community. So don't overlook the nonprofits that are already serving people in your community and see if you can plug into those.
I remember a previous episode, Mark, where you talked about churches where their facilities are used for a voting precinct.
Yeah.
And you're getting the community coming to your church building.
Yeah, man.
Serve them.
Feed them the best coffee and the best food, and give them the best surroundings they could possibly have, comfortable places to sit, warm, friendly smiles when they walk in the door.
Cupcakes.
Big signs that tell them where the restrooms are, all that kind of stuff.
Gigi's Cupcakes.
That's right. Cupcakes. Always good. So, yeah, man, do all of that. And just kind of live in a way where you're really trying to see, how can we bless the community? As we say all the time, how can the community be noticeably better because the church is here? And maybe that's giving our building away, letting the neighborhood use the building, letting people use it. Maybe it's getting involved in the nonprofits that are already doing stuff. Obviously, it's connecting to your schools. Man, do a ride along with the police. They'll let you do that. Mike, tell them you're a pastor. You want to ride along in daytime, ride along at nighttime. Let the police kind of, you get a feel for the community at that point, what's going on. Come back to your church on Sunday morning and say, hey, man, I rode along with the police. Here's some things that the police told me that are really issues in our community. So let's have some concerted prayer for those. Help them begin to think outside themselves and look beyond themselves and understand that success is our ministry footprint, not just how many people come in this building.
One of the pastors that I am currently coaching is the former police chief of the town.
Oh, really?
You think he knows the ministry?
That's right.
You think he knows the community? You
That's
think
right.
he knows what he needs to be doing?
That's right.
He is doing a great job. Alec, I'm talking about you in case you happen to be listening to this podcast, because I think you're doing a great job. He was bivocational, and now he retired as police chief, and now he's full-time vocational at the church. And
that is just awesome.
Just doing a great job in the church.
That's cool. That's really sweet.
All right, number seven. What do you communicate in your new members class?
I mentioned this in a previous podcast. It may have been episode 74. Your new members class should communicate three things. One, information, facts about the church, what the church believes, where everything from who is our staff to where the restrooms are to where the kids area is, facts about the church. It's part of a denomination, something about the denomination. So number one is information. Number two is expectation. This is what is expected to be a part of the body of Christ. 1 Corinthians 12, you are a member of the body of Christ. Yes, church membership is a biblical term. Learn what it means in 1 Corinthians 12. And then assimilation. When someone gets done with the new members class, they should either be moving into a ministry or soon moving into a ministry. Those three things will get people in the community if you're highly intentional, Mark.
They certainly will. And again, always be looking at the neighborhood through the eyes of a missionary, and always try to find ways to pray for the community. If your folks won't go out and serve the community, first get them to pray for it in the building, and then get them to pray for it outside of the building. Get them to engage in prayer walks with you and go up and down the streets of your neighborhood and help them pray for the people who live in those homes and pray for the people, the kids who are in the schools, and even go to the fire station. We did that, and stand in front of the fire station and pray for the first responders and what they might have to experience today. Just get your people outside the building and help them. If they're not going to tell you they're not going to go pray for people, goodness sakes, if they do, have them call Tom and he'll take care of that. But at least start with that, because you want them to develop compassion, because their serving will come out of compassion as they begin to pray for people and see the community the way Jesus sees the community. And finally, Mike, the more they love Jesus, the more they're going to love the community. And so we don't want them loving the church as it is, or loving the organization, or loving their own little network. You want them to love Jesus. So point them to Christ in your preaching, point them to Christ in your conversations, and as the more they love Jesus, the more they'll love the community.
Okay, Mike, I hope that this has been helpful to you. It's a good question. You got the books coming to you.
Yep.
And always, we're grateful to the North American Mission Board for sponsoring Revitalize and Replant.
Yep, Revitalize and Replant is sponsored by the North American Mission Board and churchreplanters.com. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committed to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches while simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new ones. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor, or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.
Let me just give this reminder to you. For now, we're in 2019, and for the last few months, we've introduced the Revitalize Bundle in partnership with the North American Mission Board. We've seen an incredible response to this. You see the link at the bottom of this podcast about the Revitalize Bundle. You also see a link about our organization that is the nonprofit to fund so much of this, which is a Revitalized Network, and you see both of those links. Just want to remind you, as we move into 2019, that is a key partnership that we have with the North American Mission Board. It is a key partnership that we have with churches and other organizations. So thank you for being a part of that, and thank you for joining us on Revitalize and Replant, where we continue to revitalize churches together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play, or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.